Hello and welcome to the Serious Games Podcast, all about playful methods for interactive trainings and facilitation. Let's get started.
And welcome back to the Serious Games Podcast. Today, I am connected to Copenhagen in Denmark, obviously. I'm connected with Per Christiansen. Oh, wow. We've met 2013. That is 8 years ago, when I was trained by you in the LEGO Serious Play method. Per is the co-founder of the Association of Master Trainers in the LEGO Serious Play method and the consultancy Trivium. But Per, before I read everything that you've done, could you just introduce yourself? Welcome to the podcast. And then let's talk about LEGO Serious Play today.
Hi, Julian. It's good to be with you. I think you did it. I think you did really well. So, yeah, I am a partner in Trivium, and we are based in Copenhagen, and I'm a co-founder of this association. And maybe, like, I've been working with and on with Serious Play for, I guess, 20 years, so which I think is why we're sitting here as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, early adopter. In fact, you co-developed parts of the method. We'll talk about that later, because what I really want our listeners to get a feeling for, okay, not everyone has been in a LEGO Serious Play session or workshop, so maybe we can do two parts in this podcast. Number one, look at just one topic that you can tackle with the method, and then let's talk a little bit about, you know, where did it come from, and what the, where the magic happens, and how, if it can be applied in virtual setups, etc. So, how would you describe LEGO Serious Play to someone who never even heard about LEGO Serious Play?
First of all, I think I would probably try not to describe it. I would put on a mask and go to somewhere where there are not tough restrictions, and I would take out my Lego bricks and I would demonstrate it to them.
Yeah,
I'll get to it, but I want to use a metaphor first. Sometimes describing what Lego Serious Play is like describing downhill skiing. It doesn't really make sense to describe it. You cannot really convey the feeling or the flow experience you have, or the just pure joy when you have it. Mm-hmm. So that was my honest answer. Well, maybe I would get the vaccine real fast and go to see someone. If I was cornered and had to do it on a Zoom call, I might actually try to go back to a quote, or at least paraphrasing a quote from the owner of LEGO, of the LEGO company, because all of this started with him. And Kjell Kirk is his name. Kjell Kirk has always seen the Lego brick as a language. It wasn't a toy. It was a language. It was a language that children spoke between each other when they were playing. And they spoke it to develop themselves, their skills, their social, their cognitive skills. And then what he said back then was, when this was being developed, now finally it was developed into a language that could be brought into boardrooms. In that sense, it's really a language that adults in organizations in the boardroom, that's where it started, can speak when they're trying to solve a complex issue or want to develop a unique solution, because it's also a language which is spoken between the brain cells. It's almost like saying that language now is becoming complicated. Mm-hmm. That language starts inside the head and then becomes a language between us. So you can actually talk, you can use this language for any complex issue. Mm-hmm. We, and now let's go to what we do, or what I do in Trivium, which is sort of my, let's call it client facing or consulting arm.
Okay.
We use it a lot for what we might label complex issues. So we use it in developing new value propositions, business models, when there are mergers inside or between organizations, and we do it a lot in strategy development. So figuring out or diagnosing. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's zoom into one of those examples in a second. But I think that's also and thanks for bringing up the metaphor of the and the quote of the language. That's probably also why the answer to the question, what can the LEGO Serious Play method be used for, is so unsatisfying, right?
It's like asking, what can we talk about? Everything.
What can you use stickies for? Well, you know, there are lots of things that you can do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So,
but maybe, sorry to interrupt you. I think there's one thing I would say that, you know, sometimes with questions like this, it's almost easy to say, what shouldn't it be used for?
Mm.
And it shouldn't be used for communicating what someone else already knows.
Yes.
Mm. So this is for thinking. It's not for imposing someone's answer. So maybe the answer to your question is more like, well, there are things it shouldn't be used for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And now you said you and your team at Trivium, you're using it for, you know, complex issues, strategy development,
yes,
future scenarios, etc.
Yes.
Maybe we can just give our listeners a short, like, look and feel of such a workshop or a session, right?
Yeah.
So let's say, you know, you're vaccinated and everyone is vaccinated, or there's no pandemic, and let's use an example from the last years. So let's say you would have a workshop next week. What would you need to prepare or know about the team, their issues, the company, their problems, and how and what they did in the past?
So if we take a strictly facilitative approach, which we tend to do, we as facilitators basically need to be sufficiently ignorant. That means what we really know is what to ask and how to ask. So to a degree, let's just speak as a first person, I don't need to know a lot about the individuals. I don't need to know a lot about the company. Because when we do that, we tend to project our assumptions about the answer onto them. So we end up almost like manipulating them to an answer which they don't fully own them. Now, of course, we need to know something. We need to know something about strategy. We need to be able to speak their language. That's why I say sufficiently ignorant. Because then the approach we take to it is that, you know, we use the series play, LSP, to help them think, right? And to help them communicate this. So we would typically, all things equal, we will typically go in and use the series play for them to do a diagnosis first. And when I say diagnosis, I mean sort of, first step of the workshop is a lot about them diagnosing their current state. So who are we today? Whichever that we is. It could be a department, a business unit, startup, so forth and so on. So really sort of saying, okay, who are we? Positive or negative? It's a brutally honest version of that. And that's because we come from a perspective, when we speak strategy about, we start from the resources, resources, not so much from the external world, and other people have a different approach and so forth and so forth. Then we'll typically start diagnosing the landscape.
Okay, hold on. Now, look, Per, you're using lots of Lego.
I know, I'm sorry.
Language already, you know, that's a natural language for us, I would say, these days.
Geeks.
But let's roll back just a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you were hired, you're in the room. Of course, there are some Lego bricks. We're going to get into the details later.
Yep.
Now, how does this diagnosis work?
Okay,
I mean,
fair enough.
Sitting down. Of course, there's a welcoming. And then what do you do? Do you explain where the method comes from?
Nope.
And that this is a language? Or what do you do? How does it really feel firsthand for a participant in that workshop?
Thank you, Junior. Getting me back to basics. No, it's really good. Let's picture this. First of all, we tend not to be more than 12 people.
Okay.
That does mean we can't be more than 12 people. But now we're talking strategy, a workshop, and then we typically want a smaller group to create lots of time and space for people.
Yes.
We don't talk a lot. Do now, maybe, but not in a workshop.
Okay.
In a workshop, it's actually about getting started.
Right.
Because, you know, let me park the getting started for a second, but then the why getting started. They don't care where this comes from.
Yep.
And it makes no difference to them. And the more I would talk or the CEO would talk, the more this feels like any other meeting. So let's get started. We didn't start this podcast by you explaining to me who created that microphone of yours. Why does the noise reduction work so well? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter to me, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we have to get started really fast. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a language, as I said, or we can call it a method, but let's stick with the language. When you need to use a language mm-hmm. on a difficult manner, first you need to learn the grammar or the syntax of the language.
Yeah.
So we spend a little bit of time just getting to understand that.
Mm.
Right. So just getting into the language, realizing, you know, oh, I can build with a Lego brick. It doesn't mean which bricks I choose. It matters what they mean. When I share my story, which they do, mm-hmm. people will listen to me. So getting into that one. So and that might take an hour. It's the best investment ever, but it might take an hour. This is like a metaphor here could be like a 100-meter sprint, right? They warm up an hour to run for 10 seconds.
Yeah. And by that learning the language, like by that first hour, I mean, of course, would you already ask the questions about the complex issue? Of course not, right? You would start with
simpler things. Yeah,
simpler things. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have an example for that? Like, what is your favorite, startup question?
Before I start, so we typically start with three exercises. And one of them is so simple that it's really just about reconnecting with the Lego brick. So let's forget about that one. And then we do a little bit of an exercise, which is really about getting in there and realizing and being intentional about the metaphors that we use. And we all use metaphors all the time. And then we do this, what we call a story making exercise, which really helps people to start building things that they didn't know they know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is something I didn't know I knew that. So we tap into all the stuff that the individuals don't know that they know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the potential knowledge, if I may call it that. There's a lot of cool ones there. And here we tend to go extreme, like the nightmare version of a given thing. Mm-hmm. And they are just they're fun, mm-hmm. and fun is a serious matter, right? But we're building things like a nightmare competitor, a nightmare consultant, a nightmare mm-hmm. politician. And it's actually a really nice moment because these models are very imaginative and they're lots of fun. There's lots of truth in them. It's also typically the moment where many realize that, this does something to my, to my thinking.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this does something to how people are listening to my thinking.
Mm.
And so in that sense, that's a really nice moment. You almost sense... like a shift in the room.
Mm, yeah.
And you don't say that because then the magic is gone, right?
Right, right. And you just mentioned it shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Imagining 12 people in the room. Mm-hmm. Everyone is, going through this, getting to know the new language activities. And mm-hmm. then they're sharing, they're talking about what they've built and created. As you mentioned, for example, a nightmare competitor. So one person is explaining, sharing, storytelling, story making.
Yep.
And all the others, including you, are listening, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So that's why maybe our listeners can sense already like a difference from the meetings or the workshop that they're or the workshop sessions or part or sequences that they're normally in.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, so we typically, if I can just build on that one, Julian, because we do make a big thing about talking about 100-100. Mm-hmm. This notion of... That these are 100-100, let's call them meetings, right? Yeah. Where everyone is involved all the time, right? Yeah. That's one part of the 100-100. So you are involved when you're building, but you're also involved when you're listening.
Yes.
So everybody's always engaged in the process. We also, another aspect to the 100-100 is that every person unlocks their full potential. So it's almost like saying there's an internal 100-100, or intrapersonal 100-100, and there's an interpersonal 100-100 actually going on.
Okay.
Maybe we should just circle back and then get rid of this strategy workshop. But imagine that
absolutely.
When they now know this, right, then the first step could be, or for us typically is, that they build the identity.
Okay.
Of whatever constituency we are making a strategy. They are making a strategy for. So if we were doing it for department, they would build the identity of the department. And the identity it can really cover a lot of things. It could be their competences. It could be their current value proposition. It could be their cultural values. It could, you know, capabilities, anything that they sense, that their sense of purpose and mission, right? Just all of that thing that we as an entity are today. And when they get that, and they always start from building individual models, because what Julian think we are is you know, equally true as what Georgina thinks, right?
There you go.
And then we move to that shared model. And then we go for this landscape thing, as I call it, which is any outside factor. This could be where they're building their competitors and their clients and certain providers, the government, the whatever they think exists in that landscape. And landscape is just a metaphor, right? It's not a landscape, but the market is just a metaphor, right?
Okay.
So a landscape is a market, is an external world, is your environment, whatever metaphor, whatever label you attach to it. Right?
Okay. Wow.
And then from then you work on it. Right?
I really have the feeling that I need to put the Lego Serious Play language and the steps also in the show notes and in the marks of the episode, just so we get it straight, okay? Because you were talking about, of course, individual models. I build a model. I get to share what it means to me. Everyone else gets to listen. And yes, they, of course, also get to ask some questions about the model, right?
Yes.
To clarify. Okay, then we have a shared model, which means 12 people agree on one single model as the answer to the question that you have posed, or let's stick just with the identity. Okay? What's the identity of this department or team? And that's one model, one answer. And just to clarify, more than one person will then explain what that model means to the group. Right.
Typically.
And I think that's also, you know, maybe we're just going back to how the method works later on. But this is also a magical moment for me when we have to agree on what this model means and not only what it means, but also how we phrase it. Right.
Yeah.
So now we really have a shared language. Yeah. Then, right.
Yeah, that's a powerful moment. And I know you know this, but it's also the process of creating the shared model can take a long time. And we always dive into the theories and all that later. But there is something about this being together, this interacting over the boundary object. And touching things and moving things and moving around things. And I mean, body cognition, constructionism, whatever you want to call it, but there's a lot of things going on there. And just interacting in that way creates a pretty deep commitment to the model. Now, it really does. And I've had, I mean, I remember a client session where I was back to them a year later after our first strategy session. And they had merged with another division. And the VP or executive VP that I was working with, he became the EVP of this newly formed division, right? And his leadership was probably 60-40, old and new, right? So I came in there. And we're going to start a new strategy process. And I was looking at that. Like they bought the materials. And you don't necessarily have to buy the materials, but these guys had because they were using it frequently.
Oh, okay.
So I came in there and I was looking at these boxes. And when you've done this a long time, you know the bricks that are supposed to be there. And I was looking at this. I'm saying, but some of these bricks, is this everything? And it's no, but we still have a... We still have the old identity and vision models. And I was like, what? That's no good, right? We're supposed to do something new here, right? And you want this new team to feel part of the leadership team. Yeah, but we really don't want to ruin it. And it really means and it really matters. And and they owned it. The commitment to those models were so high. They wouldn't even want to break them when we're doing this new version. I mean, obviously, I had to break them. No, I didn't. They did, of course, right? But we I'm not even joking here. We recorded the employee when she was walking from her office to the workshop room where they had to take it apart. They had to have this goodbye recording for, you know, eternity. So there's a really strong or beautiful ownership to the model.
Yeah, and it matters, right? More than
matters.
And that's for me more than any, you know, written words or drawings or collages that we've made. It's powerful. But before we again get into details and the theory behind, look, you mentioned just shortly again, this can take a lot of time. I mean, are we talking about half a day or 2 hours?
So the actual shared so the shared model building, as we call it, it's really hard to answer, Julian, because it depends a little bit on what they're creating a shared model of. Because the more emotionally demanding it is, the longer it takes. So you say rule of thumb, and all things equal, you know, in an hour or so, you can have a nice shared model, but it's very intense. I could give you the most crazy thing I've ever heard of, which was 2 days. I didn't do the workshop. One of my good colleagues in Trivium did. And maybe just closing that, that's a mad one, right? So it's a crazy one. But one thing, Julian, because the thing was, my partner in Trivium at that time, it took them 2 days, right? And he was devastated as a facilitator. He thought he had failed. He really thought he had failed. It took him 2 days, right? And the rest of the workshop never happened. The client was over the moon. They were so happy because in their mind, in only 2 days, they had managed to do something they hadn't been able to do the previous 18 months. So he was like, it took 2 days. God, no, I'm an utter disaster. And the client, the participant, were like, fantastic, we did it in 2 days, which we couldn't do in 18 months. So it's all about perspective, right?
Absolutely. And I think that is very important for our listeners to sense and also understand that what is part of the LEGO Serious Play method, and of course the material, our bricks, right? But then also, what type of conversations change, or as you phrase it, intra or interpersonal dynamics will you spark with that, right? And as you mentioned, sometimes, you know, thinking about if you haven't managed to come to this commitment, shared understanding of identity within the last years, you know, 2 days is still a rather good time, right? And of course, anything between, you know, if you're working with startups, if you're working with a new department, if you're working with, as you also shared, a department that already had or has a strong identity.
And less conflict, right?
Yeah. And of course, there's conflict, the mergers, the integration of new team members, of new processes. And again, that's where then the conversation and maybe the challenging parts of that method and process happened. But let's move on to the landscape. This is another thing that you mentioned, the landscape, the market, the environment, the system. So there's this one model now as a metaphor for the, let's say, identity. Where are we now? And what is this market then?
So you know, the belief here, right, both in Trim, you can say, but also all the way back to where how this started inside LEGO, is of course this notion that we exist in research you might call complex adaptive system, right? So we have all of these things out there which are impacting each other, they're impacting us, so forth and so on. So we need to understand them, and we need to understand, let's say, the relations between them. So, and each person, you know, they know things that others don't know. And not only do they know things they don't know they know, but they also know things that other people don't know they know, and all of this stuff. So by allowing them to build whatever, let's just call it agent. That's another tricky word, but it could be a stakeholder. Or, you know, sometimes you only build clients, for example, to do a client mapping. Right? But then they build that. So again, they build a metaphorical representation of this agent, of this stakeholder, this client, with the characteristics of that. Mm-hmm. Let's call it the client. It could be the client's needs and the client's dreams and their skills and their competences and their value set. What is leadership for this? So we're starting with understanding the client, the agent, which in itself is valuable. Mm-hmm. If I'm the builder, I now all of a sudden realize what I know about this client. Mm-hmm. You didn't know I knew all of this stuff. Maybe you're working with other clients. Maybe you're the CFO, so you're not client facing in the first place. So now you know this stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, this in itself is not enough. It's a good thing to know. So now we start sort of, playing. We start playing with the placing of this model. Mm. So we now place it in relation to the identity model. Mm-hmm. Are they close to us right now? Mm. Physically, literally distance, right? And what does it mean that they're close to us? Mm-hmm. Are they close to this corner or to that corner? Mm. Are they far away from us? And if so, what does that mean? So that placing starts to mean something. So we're really using the space. Mm. So even space means something now. Yeah. It could also be that the client, if it's a client, is turning in a certain way, right? Mm. So they're actually close to us, but looking away from us because, mm-hmm. Georgina from before, she built an attractive competitor who's over in that corner of the table. So the client is close to us, but they're looking towards the competitor. Now, what does that mean for us? Okay. So we started to create all of this, or unlock if you want, knowledge through the building and through the placing.
Okay. All right. So in my imagination, but also in my memory, of course, we have a larger identity model on the mm-hmm. table, and then we have smaller agents or customers or values models on the table. Again, still in the same mode, right? We mm-hmm. build, mm-hmm. we share, mm-hmm. we listen, we ask mm-hmm. questions, mm-hmm. and then we do exactly the same with the placement then, right? We place it there and we move it around, etc. Okay, now, look, you were talking a lot about, unlocking the knowledge. Do you somehow invite or prepare participants when you invite them to such a workshop to look at the clients or to analyze something in advance or to bring something, do some warm-up activities? Or do you just trust that in that very moment, in that very mode, energy, stance that they're in, that this is the full answer or correct answer or best answer? Or how do you deal with that?
Typically, yes. What I mean is we typically don't ask them to prepare because they know. Mm-hmm. They know so much. Mm-hmm. And what they know, they've shared. No, rephrase that. Mm-hmm. Some of what they know, the thing that they know they've shared before, right? And people have heard it a million times. And so the more we, all things equal, ask them to prepare, they will be saying what they've always said. They might, to a degree, say what they think is supposed to be said, mm-hmm. and they will use, bear with me here, but bullshit bingo language. Mm-hmm. I did business school. I can also do all those words, right?
Sure.
It's all that other stuff that they know that we want to get out.
Okay. Yeah.
For the stuff that we know, and the stuff that we could prepare from home, we can do nice PowerPoints and we can stay on Zoom. Mm-hmm. It's the other stuff. And people know so much. And it is, I would like to do a circle back a little bit to why always starting from the individual, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We can anchor that in theory if we want to, but mm-hmm. I'd rather sort of actually come back to the owner of Lego. Mm-hmm. Because one of these key beliefs when this mm-hmm. got started was this notion that people know more than they know, and every person knows something that other people don't know, and every person knows part of the answer that we need to hear. Mm-hmm. They know, we know it. People know stuff. The problem is not data, it's making it into knowledge and sharing in a way so that it's heard by others.
Okay, all right. And I'm still imagining the mm-hmm. identity model, the mm-hmm. agents, again, mm-hmm. value, right? And when does it end? I mean, how do you debrief?
When does it end?
How do you transform all those conversations that were going on, all this knowledge that we now added to the conversation. I mean, is that recorded? Do you write lots of whiteboards? And how do you make sure that a group, a team, acts upon what they know?
Yeah. So I'd like to sort of take out a word of your question to me there, which was debrief, and let's call it document instead.
Okay, yeah.
Because, and our language, I know language is a weird thing, but to me, a debrief is when we are reflecting on what others did and we explain, almost like explaining to them what they did and what the result was.
True.
And you don't in serious play.
Okay.
Because in serious play, the answer is on the table. It's been built.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the facilitator doesn't have to do much in terms of debriefing or summing up because they know they build it. Mm-hmm. Now, here, so the workshop, let's just kind of pause on the workshop here because it might not be done yet, right? Mm-hmm. So lots of things you can do, but let's imagine that we are running out of time in our workshop. Mm-hmm. We're looking at this landscape. They made this analysis of their market, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So they know who they are, their purpose, blah, blah, blah. They know the clients, the competitors, the maybe the trends, maybe the suppliers, mm-hmm. maybe blah, blah. And then they might build a vision. So considering this, who do we want to become?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now that you know who you are, you know where you are, you can see the spaces that are in that market, mm-hmm. and you have your vision for who you want to become, right? Boom.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now we are coming to the end of the workshop.
Mm.
So here then, depending on the client's let's say maybe existing definition or template for strategy. From now, we might want to start saying, okay, so maybe what they want to identify is customers to focus on. Mm. Maybe they want to identify the competencies they now have to build. Maybe they want to identify focus areas. Maybe they want to identify action points. And that could then be a closing building exercise.
Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. I understand.
And then say the facilitator, typically we literally record the story.
Sure. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Of the core, the diagnosis, mm-hmm. of the market, the landscape, the diagnosis, mm-hmm. of the vision, mm-hmm. right, and the actions. This can then be carried into work mm-hmm. either simply as these recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, lots of organizations require a physical written document.
Right.
But it's pretty easy to translate mm-hmm. these recordings into the document. Because you have the strength, let's say it's a SWOT, right? You have the strength there, you have the weaknesses there, you have the threats, you have the opportunities. That can be done by the facilitator, not typically, but it can, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. by the client, mm-hmm. or in some sort of collaboration. And then it becomes sometimes a pretty classical document, strategy document.
Yeah, yeah.
We mm-hmm. tend to encourage them a lot to carry the metaphors into the document mm-hmm. because the metaphors carry that emotional commitment.
Hmm.
So there is a depth in that, and a commitment to execution in that, which disappears if you turn the particular hmm. metaphor
yeah.
into a business lingo statement.
Right.
So
right.
we try to. I remember like people were they wanted to build a brew bridge, right? For you and me, that doesn't mean anything, but for them, it was an action that they were really, really committed to. They mm. really, I mean, draining the swamp now means something different mm. thanks to a, but this was also in a core identity in a department, in a pharma company some years back. And for them, it was very, very clear what it meant.
Yeah.
So these metaphors are really powerful.
Okay.
Help them
okay.
and carry them over into the work. And for us, sorry for going on a rant here, but it's really important that we see play as equally important as work, right? Work mm-hmm. is where you implement decisions. Mm. Play is where you explore and experiment mm. in order to develop what you want to implement. Mm-hmm. So strategy is a great example of play. When we make a strategy, we're actually not work, or we're not implementing, right? We're imagining where we want to focus and all this stuff, right? The work is when we take those and implement them.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's say that is then the workshop, okay? Again, 25 minutes of getting a sense of how such a workshop can, foster the bonds spark meaningful conversation, as you said, strengthen the commitment, add the emotional parts that might not be unlocked yet or not visible yet, bring them out, you know, make them discover. And that's then the workshop. But you mentioned so many things, and we should definitely use the rest of this episode to talk a little bit about backgrounds, what to do with remote teams, but also the Lego Serious Play market, whatever that means, you know, books and magazines and websites and certifications out there. So you mentioned a few things already where it came from. Could you you know, maybe spend 2 minutes or three on the origins of the method and maybe also your role in that?
2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. Not
no, no, I'm happy to. No, it's important. I mean, so let's put it like this. Serious Play started as an idea. Who got the idea first is hard to say, but an idea emerged in the head of the Lego owner, right? An idea about unleashing potential, right? An idea that, or a need maybe, but he had the idea that people have an unlocked potential, and that's also a belief, right? Mm-hmm. He had an idea or a dream of more imaginative strategies. Mm-hmm. He's a great believer in the Lego brick. The man is so value-driven. So there was this idea about making strategies different.
Okay.
There was then two professors at IMD, right, where Lego has lots of connections, who also had this idea of crafting strategies and this idea about maybe the Lego brick can work for this. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of the meeting between those three that sparked the initial idea of Serious Play, which frankly speaking, I'm going to whisper this, right? Didn't work in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. So it didn't work in the beginning, but the idea was there. And
right.
And I think these guys, they sense, you know, when this is not working right now, it's not because it's never going to work. It's just because we haven't cracked the code, right? Their first airplanes really didn't get up and fly, started flying, right? So there wasn't the idea. It was the putting the idea to work, right? Let's put it that way. So what happened then was that they involved Robert, who I know you also met, Julian, Robert Rasmussen, who has a background in learning and development and came from the R&D of the educational products. And Robert knows and knew a lot about, you know, how children, but, you know, people learn, right? How do we create knowledge? And so he was good at putting structure. Let's call it structure. It's not the right word, but to this. And Robert got involved and it started to take shape, really, right? And this is probably, we're talking now, we're getting to 2001, and that's when I personally joined.
Okay.
So I came from the mothership, from Lego. I have a background as a sort of management consultant, and I did business school, and I can do a 2x2 matrix all by myself, so I'm very good. Yeah, I know. Thank you. And I just, when you work for Lego, unless you really have no sort of natural curiosity, it's impossible not to start getting curious about learning and development, the brain and play, right? So I think that I got infected by that bug as well, and I came across this, and it just really, really for me matched perfectly my belief about, you know, how, what strategy is. Remember, this was really a strategy tool back then.
Okay,
what strategy is, how it works, etc. So I joined that team in 2001. Okay. And joined with Robert, and you can say that became the facilitator training. We put some flesh on the bones, and in pharmaceutical terminology, we started moving from the research phase to the development phase, and actually having something, if that works as a metaphor here, right? That starts to work. We did the first official facilitator training in September 2001.
All right. And then between that, you know, between the training and crafting and further developing and
where we are now,
prototyping, I mean, the method, and I'm probably just going to link a few websites and documents, of course, has principles, core steps, philosophy, and it's all written down, and it can be seen.
Maybe Julian, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Maybe really quick, the story is, you know, we were an independent company from Lego, owned by the owner of Lego, and controlled by him, basically, you can say. And we worked as a really independent company for a while. To get out of that Lego system, because we were so different, right? And then we were merged into Lego.
Okay.
And I, as the only one from the startup, I continued inside Lego, and we were inside Lego for a while, and we experimented with then with different business models. I left Lego because I thought I had something else I needed to, I had an itch I needed to scratch, and it was the wrong itch, but that's a different story. Right. Maybe a different podcast. So you can tell things you did, you shouldn't have done podcasts. Invite me for that. and then things happened inside Lego, and Lego at some point said, you know, the entire initial team of Serious Play with me and others, you know, we were no longer there. So they kind of said, let's make this, let's change the business model.
Okay.
And then they did this thing that they initially called open source. They they quickly tried to change it into a community model where they focused on selling the bricks. They called it open source, and they published a document called open source. So that label has kind of stayed with them. This was around 2010. And since then, lots of things have happened. Just to
And that's interesting, because that,
you have it there.
That I will link the podcast.
Yeah. And, it's not, be a little bit careful. Lego has actually discontinued the document a little bit.
Okay.
So they're not, there are things in it that are not so precise.
Right, right. I mean, again, there's lots to read about the, again, process, facilitators, code of conduct. And again, we need to keep in mind when this document was published.
Yeah.
And the speed why was called open source.
Yeah. And I the speed with which it happened, I think, it also matters, actually, a little bit.
Yeah. And also, I mean, now it's under a Creative Commons deed.
Yeah.
I mean, parts of it.
Yeah.
So how does that work, by the way? I mean, I've seen online, like, LSP 1.0. I mean, is there an LSP 2.0, 3.0? And how does it work now with the things that are developed or that were developed after Lego discontinued?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have founded somewhere after 2001, the association. Yeah. How does that work?
So let's take all these numbers, which I think it's fair to say there is a. I prefer to focus on this notion of the LSP 1.0. As let's say that there is that, and with that, let's say that it's the thing that Lego made open source.
Right.
In 2010, I believe, and the stuff that's in that document, right, which is very relatively simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have a three-step process, right? And it's really about, you know, question and building and sharing, and that at its core is, you know, that's what Lego Serious Play is and was, and it is, you know, the document also gives some examples for some workshops, and this is sort of it. This is what was there when we left, and what they said, what we actually also tried to trademark at some point back in the ED on behalf of Lego, or owned by Lego, but so that's that one. And that's open.
Yeah.
Anyone can do it, just like coaching, right?
Yeah. Well, coaching is not, I would like to add, you know, easy to understand, and you can read the document, hard to master, right?
And that's why, but that's why coaching is a great example, right? You can call your coach. I can call myself a coach. My sons, 14 and 17, they can call themselves a coach, right? I'm a coach. I ask questions. And there, you know, everybody agrees that coaching is asking a question, someone answering you, and then you work from there, right? As an analogy, that's also Serious Play.
Right.
There is this thing about asking a question, someone building an answer in Lego bricks, and then that answer is shared, right? So there's that. After that, you can then say, and Lego then decided, that's what we're going to say it is, and then we're going to sell materials that can be used for it. Because, hey, we're a toy company, right? So then, I didn't, in the beginning, they actually tried to make a little bit of a board for it as well, just to but that got discontinued fast. So after that, well, that was a quiet period, but Robert and I, Robert Rasmussen and I, when we had our different companies, and we also had a long story, and we had been the trainers when we were employed by Lego. Even when we were not employed by Lego, Lego was still insourcing us to deliver training on behalf of them. So it's like, if someone says they were trained by Lego, it means they were trained by Robert or me, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I think we were sitting there in each our house and we both knew that we were going to continue training people in series play, which was perfectly legal. And this was what we'd been doing, and this is what we believed in. And I don't even remember who made the call, but I think we both had this feeling. I know he's going to do it. He knows I'm going to do it. So instead of developing our own material alone, why don't we form something, develop it, and then actually compete on the market?
Yeah.
So we did. And so we then developed, based on what was there, right, and sort of starting point, whatever, again, think coaching, right? We then developed our things with series play. Like, I started to train people in this. We developed our own manual. We did some work on the core process. We developed some application techniques and something that Robert had already been toyed with when he was independent, in his Rasmussen consulting company. We furthered that. And we then took this, let's call it IP, and we put it into this association.
Right.
Which you can think of as a guild.
Okay.
The purpose of the association is not to make money. It's to uphold the quality of Lego series play. Basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So everything that we develop, we put into this one. So a member, in the beginning, it was just me and Robert, right? Now we are more trainers around the world. All trainers they deliver the facilitator training program with the same roadmap. Mm-hmm. The same material, same everything, right? Mm-hmm. And then we form a community around that. Okay. And the association doesn't make any money. It's not a commercial activity. The trainer has to pay a fee to it, but no royalties. Mm-hmm. So it is really this guild which is there to protect the quality. So that's what we did. And then shortly after, other trainers emerged, right? Some of them were strongly anchored in the 1.0, let's call it 1.0, right? Some of them were strongly anchored in the 1.0 past. Some were even trained, or at least one was even trained by me and Robert as a trainer. So super competent person who just chose a different path. Super competent person who chose a different path.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now we understand or got a sense of the association, and we got to know each other 2013 again. That's
pre-corona.
Unbelievable. I mean, and I was trained by both of you, right? I remember in December. You still do that in December, like a training?
Yes, we do.
Great. Yeah,
so maybe just a note on that one. So Robert and I do one training a year, just to, you know, we speak a lot, but being in the room together is a different thing. So we align, except for 2020.
There you go.
Where we couldn't be that many in the room, so I did the session alone with a smaller group. It was so sad.
Okay, all right. So I, of course, went to additional trainings that you all offer on the business model canvas, and I now see things emerging around design thinking. But what happened roughly, I mean, between 2013 when I was trained and today? Is that something that you could just elaborate on shortly? Any other application techniques, any other crossovers, or where's this journey going?
It's a question. So where is series play going as a method? It's a question we sometimes get at. And in one answer is that it's not going anywhere. And that way it's like gravity. We are not changing gravity. We're just understanding gravity better. And we're starting to realize how to use gravity. So sometimes I kind of like the metaphor that series play was never developed. It's being discovered. So we always get to understand the series play method better and better and better. So your training, if you came to it today, and if you did it today, when doors open up again, mm-hmm. you would recognize so much of it, mm-hmm. but it would also be so different. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot of the same things. We're just doing them better because we've discovered more about series play. Okay. We discover, I mean, some of it is theory that's coming up that we can start seeing, that's what's happening in the brain where we're asking the question. So I should ask it that way. Some of them are pure, let's say, practice. We're realizing how actions, so actions impact behavior and how we create these spaces and how we articulate the questions better. So there's a discovery going on, right? So that's one thing. The other part of your question, I think, was then new applications of series play.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff happening. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when people have done the training like you have, they can develop their own workshops. Absolutely, right? So there's a million things happening that we don't know anything about, right? Mm-hmm. But there are also more trainings in you know, where we have developed a roadmap and we train people in using this mm-hmm. particular roadmap. And the mm-hmm. trainers are offering a pretty broad spectrum of these. I have, when there have been windows in the corona pandemic, been offering actually a training that's developed on based on something we did years ago, which we call the Beast Workshop, where we mm-hmm. where we really dive in and we work on complex issues and we play a lot of emergence. So, mm-hmm. and I know you know what this means, but mm-hmm. if our listeners can go back to imagining that big table with all these models, we right. play future events. And we see how the landscape respond to this. Mm-hmm. We even play out decisions. So what if I lowered my prices? Mm-hmm. And we see how the landscape responds to this. All of this in order to make better strategies and being better able at handling the unforeseen, which mm-hmm. when we, right now we're sensing the demand from our clients to do this. They just can't get into the room. So we're really doing a lot of this as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And yeah, again, there's only so much we can cover in an hour, right? But of course, applications and that are based on then the landscape that a group and that a team has built, understood, agreed on, committed to. And then as you mentioned, okay, playing out future scenarios, playing out possible decisions, and by that, preparing yourself for that scenario. And also very, very, very powerful part of the process.
Yeah.
And look, the question that I get, where can I be trained? You know, how can someone, and that might going to extend that question, not only to be a own trainer, because not everyone is a facilitator who's listening to the podcast. What if you hire someone to, you know, do and use the Lego series play method and materials for the question at hand? How can they make sure that they receive quality and not only Lego bricks in the room? Is there a quick answer to that?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Now, obviously, I think that, you know, trainers from us are the best and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But that's almost too simple, right? So here's what I would, again, you asked two questions, I think. So if someone was going to go out and be trained as a facilitator first.
Yes.
And I think, sorry, I'm just thinking this through.
Mm.
If I was to be trained as a facilitator today, I think I would check into the what's the background of my trainer?
Mm.
You know, where, how did they get into Lego series play?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Frankly, I mean, and there's some really good, I mean, I'm immensely proud of the work we do in the association, but there are other really good providers of facilitator training out there mm-hmm. in series play. But there are also people who might have come into this a little bit because, hey, this feels like a hype.
Mm.
So I think I'll check in with that. I do also, I'm a great believer in actual client experience. So
yes.
This is coming, you know, when I went to business school, I like my teachers to have a deep understanding of the theory, but I really like the ones who had also been a manager.
Yes.
So I would also look into that. I would look for that the trainer as client experience. And with that, I don't mean, that they've trained a facilitator inside a company. I mean that they delivered workshops inside a company helping with developing a new business model. I think these were the things I would be looking for. Yeah. I would also maybe look for that the trainer doesn't promise you an easy, quick fix.
Yeah.
Because Serious Play is not, it looks so easy, but that's, but it's not, right? So maybe that. I mean, don't look for quick fix. Mm-hmm. Check in where the trainer comes from. What's their background? How did they get into this? And have they done client delivery, right? Mm-hmm. These are the things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. If I was hiring a facilitator, mm-hmm. well, I would sort of almost do the same thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. I would check in that my facilitator had done a facilitator training, not just read a book on this. And I would really, again, and then check in with what is this facilitator training? Have you done a 3-hour Zoom conversation with someone and now you think you can do Serious Play? Or have you done something a little bit more in depth?
Right.
Because you said it a few times, Julian, I think this notion of sometimes it's like Serious Play is just having Lego bricks and asking questions, but that's not that's not what it is, right? There is all these theories about how to build up these questions, how to ask the right question, how to create the safe space, how to actually create that 100-100, right?
Yeah, and I would love to share, things that we discussed before we started the recording, right? That once then this, or as you mentioned in your example, right? Once then this dynamic, this conversations, this mutual exchange or authentic exchange, emotional exchange is going on, right? Then you as a facilitator really need to be present, observe. Know your game and what to do, and not everything that, I can just speak for myself, I do then in the room, even if I use the Lego Serious Play method and material, is then Lego Serious Play, right? Because sometimes you need to mediate, sometimes you need to do something different to spark an idea, sometimes you just need to drop all your plans and ask another question, a deepening question, or something emerges and that you have not had on your radar, and then you need to react on that. And then you go like, oh my God, it's going to take me another hour or two. How are we going to make sure that, we get a good insight and flow of the workshop? Yeah. So that is something, firsthand experience. I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's just something there. And then an analogy that I tend to like is a little bit with a brush, right? And calligraphy.
Mm-hmm.
That you have a brush does mean you can do calligraphy.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do calligraphy without a brush.
Okay. Yeah.
So Lego bricks doesn't make it Lego Serious Play, but it's hard to do Serious Play, impossible to do Serious Play without Lego bricks. And it's really this notion of knowing what to do with the tool. So the brick is essential, but it doesn't make it. The brush is essential for the calligraphy, but it doesn't make it calligraphy that you're holding a brush.
Wow, Per, so much. I have two more questions.
I'm
trying to really, looking at the clock right
now. Yeah, it's ticking, right?
I'll do a second episode on legacy.
It's a good thing that people are in lockdown and have all this time at home, right? What else would they be doing? Listen,
we could just go on for hours. Look, remote teams. Again, they have been remote teams before the pandemic. But of course, now lots of everything has not only changed, but also moved to virtual or online learning environments. So what do you think? Is that a good thing? Is that working? Are we losing too much of the core of the DNA of the essence of the method? Or is it just, another great way of speaking the language?
So if we had a choice, you and me, when it comes to doing this podcast, we would have preferred to sit across the table from each other.
Yeah, and have a coffee.
And have a coffee, right? But this works because this is the option we have now. Mm-hmm. So for me, there's an element of this in this situation we are in now, right?
Mm.
The technology enables us to do things we wouldn't otherwise be able to do in this lockdown period. There are definitely limits to the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I actually think when it comes to serious play that from a technology perspective,
mm-hmm.
there's probably a lot of things you can do.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean that it has the full impact mm. that it would have if we were in that room together and we could literally be building together and then we're touching the bricks and I could move your brick over in the corner of the shared model.
Mm.
And that's, so I think parts, my and I want to take my take on this, right? And then and we could probably have five facilitators in here and have a very intense and very different kind of conversation going on. I'm like this. There are certainly parts of serious play that works in remote facilitation.
Mm.
My perspective is that when I do my remote sessions, I would rather do less and then do it better.
Mm-hmm.
My take on it is also I'm very what I would call reactive to this. Mm-hmm. when my clients have a need right now
mm-hmm.
where they would benefit more from doing like a serious play than not, so to speak, then I'd rather do it. In practice, what's happening right now with my client work is that the real tough nuts where they know they need to be in the room,
mm-hmm.
they can't do it right now. But they benefit from opening the conversations, mm-hmm. also using Lakehouse Series Play, so that mm-hmm. they're building up the conversation. So we have typically shorter remote sessions
mm-hmm.
right now, where the team or parts of the team are coming together and they're starting their diagnostics. They're starting their building and they're sharing and they're learning. But the real tough stuff they are pushing out. So it's like mm-hmm. yeah, that's my take on it, right?
Yeah.
I always use the Plato's cave, right? You know, if you've only seen the shadows on the wall, mm-hmm. you think that's reality until you turn around and you see the people outside the cave. Yeah. And that's the risk a little bit here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, I think this is true for lots of serious games out there, activities, yep. interactions. Of course, we all went through this, oh, great, we're just going to convert this into a
yes.
Zoom experience, right? And then we realize, okay, maybe there are different parts. And then, as you mentioned, you know, the question is then, what would we do if this would be, let's say, the new normal? Would we then convert something or would we just create something completely new? Always focusing on the goal. And that yep. brings me, of course, yep. to the notion that, and again, true for all the serious games out there, we don't play because we want to play, or we don't do Lego Series Play because we want to do Lego Series Play, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to help facilitate. Start a yep. conversation, the buy-in, the commitment. We want to get this unknown out there. And that's when you then choose to use method XYZ or then the process XYZ,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Wow. Final question, Per. What is your ultimate facilitation tip for all our listeners? Not only for Lego Series Play, but maybe specifically for Lego Series Play. Do you have one tip? If you just could, you know, say one thing... what would it be? I'm just gonna.
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Be quiet. Always yeah, be quiet.
There you go.
No. Yeah. I really think it's hard.
I know.
But I think there is something about silence. I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that's helped me a little bit. I don't know if it's a facilitation technique, but. I think this notion of when you meet someone, you know you can learn something from that person.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone you meet, no matter what, there's a learning in them that you would benefit from. I think sometimes that helps me as a facilitator as well.
Okay.
And then quieting my own voice and
Very
one cool. thing. That's a hard one. Let's do another podcast
on
that.
I know. But I ask this every, every facilitator that I'm interviewing. So at the end of the decade, we'll have lots of answers to that question.
Yeah. Yeah, so sorry, I keep circling my mind. So there's silence, there's suspending my own knowledge about the topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Silence, suspension, curiosity.
Silence, suspension, and curiosity. Thank you so much, Pierre. It was great chatting with you about Lego.
I'm going to call you back with the answer I really want to give on that one.
Yeah, please, please do. Please do. And it's incredible that I, throughout this 1 year now of the Serious Games podcast, I didn't have a episode on Lego Serious Play out yet. We've changed that. Thank you so much. Happy to have you back for maybe another deep dive in some sort of
technique
or something completely different, or only focusing on first-hand experience. Well, we'll just have a look. Till then, thank you, Pear, and to all our listeners. Please share your feedback. And I might just say that right now, and we'll work our way around that. If you do feel that we've missed some question that you have, or if you want to ask some questions, maybe for our next episode or so, just write me an email. Leave your feedback on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Co. All right. Bye-bye from Berlin.
Bye, guys. Stay safe.
You can reach us at hello@keylearning.net. We're looking forward to your suggestions, comments, and feedback.